Have you reanimated another corpse that has turned on you in vengeance for breaking the laws of nature and God? Are you tired of ungrateful spouses that constantly complain about being resurrected into the hell of being half alive and half dead? Well, then it's time to call Deanimators. At Deanimators, we send out the best, most experienced specialist in snuffing out life that was never meant to be. Whether your problem is a stitched-together patchwork monster or just the disembodied head of your fiancé, Deanimators will come to your house and dispose of those pesky problems. Just go to deanimators.com and request a free quote. If you use code HMT at checkout, you get a free beaker.
Hello and welcome to Horror Movie Talk.
An opinionated and accidentally funny horror movie review show. Go.
Through the scraggly wood.
He had no face!
Horror!
Sabrina, don't just stare at it, eat it.
New theatrical releases always get priority.
But we also review older horror movies, both good and horrible.
Wow, that didn't sound good.
Hello! Welcome to Horror Movie Talk. I'm Bryce Hansen, the host that's not like those other hosts that hurt you. And with me, as always, is...
Professor David Day. I am the foremost expert in scare no-no.
All right. If you're new to Horror Movie Talk, just want to let you know we have a website called horrormovietalk.com. There we have links to all our social media. So if you like what you hear, you can contact us and let us know what you think. We post new episodes every Wednesday, very consistently. And if you end up liking it, please subscribe. And whether you like it or not, leave a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts.
Thank you, Daddy.
All right. We got a great show today. We're going to be talking about a movie that you can't really see, but I was kind of excited to talk about anyways.
You can't see it yet, let's be clear. Just not.
Well,
not
you can yet. You can see it, but it's the level of difficulty is a little higher than most of the movies that we cover.
Yeah. So far.
Yeah, we're going to be talking about The Brain That Wouldn't Die 2020. We'll start out by giving a brief review and our score for the movie. We score on a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being a miserable dredge where it makes you angry, 5 being a perfectly average film, and 10 being so good it transcends genre boundaries. After we give our score, we'll get into spoilers and take a deeper dive into what we liked and hated about the film. And then later on, we'll do a couple segments. This episode is special because we get to interview the filmmakers of The Brain that wouldn't die. And then later we'll play a round of taglines.
Oh, baby.
Perennial favorite.
Oh, shit.
I
forgot all about taglines. Yeah.
Of course you did.
Perennial forgetting minute. Yeah.
The taglines is one that we know is like probably one of our laziest bits. And so we feel a little guilty about doing it very often. We used to do it a lot more often. But I have had at least one person on social media recently that said they love taglines. So I thought I'd throw it in to this episode.
Okay, cool. Yeah, and not only that, this one is rife for taglines.
Yeah.
This is, yeah.
So, like I said, this is a different kind of episode. You can't see this movie yet in wide release. Well, not at least with some difficulty. This was a feature that I saw in the Portland Horror Film Festival, which was a virtual event where they streamed the movies and the Q&As and stuff. It was pretty cool. We had an announcement for it, but I don't know how many people went. Out of that festival, this was by far my favorite. This will eventually be available for streaming probably at the end of the year after it makes the festival run. They're going to a lot of festivals. So if there is like a film festival or a horror film festival close to you, keep an eye out. It will probably
be there. This is one of the better films that you'll probably ever see at a horror film festival.
Right. We really steer clear of independent horror.
Yeah. And for a reason.
We've gotten burned.
You don't kick a guy when they're down.
Yeah.
You know, you don't punch down.
We had early on.
I like the idea that we're above them. Yeah. Well, we are very we're very popular.
David, we're tastemakers in the horror movie community.
Thank you, Daddy.
Tastemakers.
What was I going to say? So, yeah, early on, probably most of our listeners haven't listened to the very early episodes. One of them was Spiral, not Spiral 2020 or 2021, whenever it's going to come out with Chris Rock.
Right, right, right.
This is another Spiral that the filmmaker reached out to us on Facebook and was like, hey, I just created this new independent
monstrosity
horror film. We would love it if you reviewed it. And we were so delighted that someone reached out to us and asked us to review that we were like, wow, we get to review it before it gets released on Amazon. And
after that, it was never again.
And we realized, like, well, that's not something we want to do because we just shit on this filmmaker's movie because it was very, very bad. And we he asked us personally to do it. So we felt a little bad and it just wasn't enjoyable. And then it turns out a lot of independent filmmakers will reach out to anyone and everyone that will listen and ask them to watch their movie and review it.
You've never met a salesman like someone who has made a low budget horror movie.
Yeah.
They are everywhere.
And more power to them. We are quote unquote creators, like doing any kind of creative endeavor. I applaud.
Yeah.
And, I think it's great. Some stuff has higher difficulty than a podcast, and therefore it's harder to get the higher quality.
If you can get by on the if your shit can stand on its own, that's very impressive. It's hard to make a thing that can stand on its legs.
Yeah, and this, in my opinion, is one of those.
Yeah, definitely. With a few little...
Yeah. Okay, so let's get into the trailer.
A doctor defying science's cautions.
I can save them. I know I can.
He's dead.
Then what have you got to lose?
A woman defying society's conventions.
I can promise you one thing. Your grandchildren won't be test tube babies.
A happy couple with a promising future. And the cruel twist of fate that changed their lives forever.
There's been a terrible accident. I've got to save her.
Her? What have you got in there?
Now, for the first time in dazzling Technicolor, a film so shocking you won't believe it until you've seen it.
Lies deceive me.
The brain that wouldn't die.
Let me die. Let me die.
Her head kept alive by experimental science, by a man whose abnormal passions inspired him to try the impossible.
I've got to go and find a body for Jan.
How do you intend to do that?
There are ways. There are ways.
His search for a perfect body threatens every beautiful woman who crosses his path. Exotic dancers, swimsuit contestants, and pinup models like this woman here all are prey to his distorted desires.
Come now, Doris. Do I look like a liar to you?
Starring Patrick Green, Rachel Perel Foskett, Jason Reynolds, Mia Allen, David Withers, and featuring Robert Blanche as Detective Mancini.
You're only delaying the inevitable. Sooner or later, the truth is going to rear its ugly head.
The brain that wouldn't die. Coming soon to a drive-in near you.
I love that laugh.
Yeah.
I love that laugh. That every time made me.
Really, there's a lot of really good selling of the concept of this movie. You're holding it close to the vest what you're going to say, so I'm kind of curious what you're going to say.
Oh, but it's nothing earth-shattering or anything like that.
The Brain That Wouldn't Die tells the story of a mad scientist/surgeon, Bill Cortner, as he tries to defy the laws of nature and resurrect the dead. In a tragic car accident, Bill's wife, Jan, is decapitated, and he rushes to save her head
with science!
While Jan's disembodied head begs to die, Bill and his lab assistant, Kurt, search far and wide for the perfect replacement body for his wife, preferably one with big old titties up top. Okay. The Brain That Wouldn't Die is a loving remake of the 1962 film, which was actually filmed in 1959, I found out, of the same name, The Brain That Wouldn't Die. You might recognize it from Mystery Science Theater 3000. It's a like one of the classic images of the woman's head on a table in the lasagna dish. They definitely lambasted it. It's a classic episode of that, but also it's just a great image. You'll recognize it if you see the trailer. This film is surprisingly faithful to the original, with a lot of the original dialogue. I didn't realize how close it was, but I've seen just clips
of
the original, and
it's very close.
But it has a distinctly more humorous tone.
Yeah,
it's a little more self-aware.
The first 20 minutes of this film specifically made me go, they watched every Mel Brooks movie a million times.
Right.
I mean,
I'm glad you said that.
It is so close to Mel Brooks's, not only his delivery and style.
Right.
In his writing, but also the acting for it is just, it comes through. It's like a loving tribute to Mel Brooks.
Yeah, that's
the first 20 or 30 minutes of this thing.
Yeah, my exact sentiments. I said it's in the realm of B-movie homage comedy horror films like Reanimator and Young Frankenstein.
It's unbelievable.
It feels a lot like Young Frankenstein.
It feels a lot like Young Frankenstein. It feels a lot like Men in Tights. It feels a lot like Spaceballs and what's that one, the world one, I can't remember.
History of the World
History
part
of the
one
world. it feels very Mel Brooks.
Yeah, not like a ton of like overt gags, but a lot of sight gags.
Yes.
A lot of gags, but not like it's more like Young Frankenstein and Reanimator, it's like they take it serious.
Yes.
But it's definitely winking at you.
There is a thing that some Mel Brooks movies do, and Young Frankenstein is a better example of this movie because it doesn't do what I'm about to describe Mel Brooks movies doing. Do you remember like the Looney Tunes where they were getting paid per bit? They would get paid per, the writers would get paid per gag in these things. So,
I didn't know that.
So the result would be this just gag after gag, 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 gag.
Yeah.
And some Mel Brooks movies feel very chock full of just a visual and then a written and then a visual and then a written. And so it comes out feeling kind of like a Looney Tune, but this not quite so much like more like Young Frankenstein,
right,
where it's taken seriously.
It is really an homage to the original Frankenstein.
Right. And it's just a kind of a nod to the camera.
Like, yeah.
You get it. We're doing a thing.
Yeah. So yeah, definitely right there. I mean, it might sound like hyperbole to compare
this
movie to those greats, because those are like the top tier. Reanimator, Young Frankenstein are like the top tier B movie like homages.
Yeah.
But this movie is genuinely funny.
It's
like really has a lot of great gags in it.
Yeah, it has some great gags in it, and it's, I mean, the acting is phenomenal.
Right. Yeah.
Is really very, very good. But the one spot where it doesn't hold up is just obviously the budget and the set pieces do not hold up.
I'm so glad you brought this up.
Do not stand up to, you know, Mel Brooks.
This is one of the most interesting things I found out, and it was answered this. I found out this in the Q&A at Portland Horror Film Festival. You'll think this is very impressive how well they pulled off this film with an estimated $80,000 budget. To give you a sense of how little that is, the original, filmed in 1959, had a budget of an estimated $62,000.
Wow.
So,
yeah. And inflation.
With inflation, that is
$500,000.
Over half $1 million in 2020 dollars, which, when you put it in that frame, it is very impressive.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely,
I mean, I guess it's impressive how well they did with such a small, I mean, that's a really small budget for now.
Yes.
Obviously. But also, it's also impressive how good of a movie you can make, you know, that basically stands up and a little better than the original.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things working in their favor. You know, there's, you know, the cost of cameras and all that kind of stuff drastically lower.
Yeah, cost of editing.
Editing is much lower.
There's no development.
Plastic set pieces are ubiquitous and cost nothing now, versus things you probably had to fabricate back then.
Or green screens.
And green screens all over the place. It allows you to achieve the on-set feel without actually having to basically do much other than edit for an hour or two. So, yeah, I mean, but nevertheless, it is an impressive result. Like, the final product is not, you can't, a real douchey douche could snub their nose at this, but I don't think they'd want to.
Yeah, obviously you can see the restraints of the budget, but it's one of those things where how people react to restraints in a budget or what they can shoot or like who's available really like sets apart good directors from bad directors.
Yes.
Or good productions from bad productions, because if they make it work and it doesn't distract you too much.
You know what this felt like was the most impressively expensive dinner theater you've ever been to.
yeah like this could definitely be pulled off in a stage play,
right?
Easily.
Yes. Maybe not easily, but it definitely had
the set dressing was very reminiscent of a stage,
and it was intentionally ironically kind of vaudevillian and overacted. Mm-hmm. And a little hammy, and it would lend itself very well to the stage.
Yeah, it's
this could be a musical, no problem, no problem.
Yeah, so the acting is great. The lead, especially played by Patrick Green, is pitch perfect.
Yeah, dude, kills it.
Absolutely great. And the rest of the cast really sells the serious but not serious tone of the movie. It's like a really great example of a respectful and like seriously taken comedy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they know that they're trying to make it funny, but they don't.
It's not horror.
They don't look at the camera when they're making a joke. That's like what might separate Mel Brooks from this, because Mel Brooks will have breaking the fourth wall moments.
Yeah. Oh, all the time. Yeah.
I don't remember any specific in this one.
Yeah.
I mean, a little bit. They have the...
I don't know. I don't think, though. I don't think they ever broke the fourth wall in this.
The one that you could make an argument for is they do show clips from the original.
Yeah.
The brain, yes, that wouldn't die, and they react to it.
Touché. That's the thing that, in the back of my mind, I was kind of like, well, there was something. Yeah.
So, score for this movie. I don't think I'm being overly generous. For all the important things that make it what it is, like, I give it a score of 8 out of 10.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, that's a tremendous score. 'Cause I don't feel like we're ever, too generous. I don't think you could accuse us of being too generous. Maybe me more so than you. I think I'm typically more. I'm more skeptical of things being able to be good, and then more impressed when they pull something off,
right,
to a minor degree. And you're kind of the inverse of that.
Right.
I don't agree with the 8 out of 10 score, just in terms of my enjoyment.
Uh-huh.
And I'll tell you why. And this is the thing that I've been kind of keeping close to the vest this whole time is, this movie could have been an 8 or a 9 for me. It really went way too long. And it lost my interest in definitely it's very safe to say the last 20 minutes there was so much in that last third act that and a lot of the second act too, that could have just been really left on the on the floor of the editing room because it just became the quick quippy pace of the whole thing at the start and for the first half of the movie was brilliant. Really, really did a strong job. And then it started, and then it just kind of got long and it just kept going back to this same mechanic. I'm looking for a girl. I'm looking for a girl. I'm looking for a girl. And it's like, okay, I just don't care that much. You achieved it. And so it really did start to disappoint me towards the end. I was kind of struggling with this last night and this morning. I'd say it. The first half of this movie was an easy 8, and the second half was a 4 or 5.
Yeah. See, that's the thing with you. I mean, not to be.
No,
too,
it is my thing. It is my thing.
If you get bothered by length, you get really bothered by it.
Yeah. It upsets me when it's like, just sit down and watch a movie 4 times. And
part of it is we had to watch 2 movies this week. And this is.
No.
That might have had something to do with
it. No, it did not. No, it absolutely did not have anything to do with it. If anything, I mean, length always bothers me. When things run too long, it irritates me because. It's so critical to have good editing in writing and in movies. It's the most important thing. And if you can't keep cutting it down to.
Sure. I mean, there's things that they could definitely cut. They did add some stuff to the movie that wasn't in the original, but I think the stuff that they added was good. But yeah, I can see how you could make an argument. But that being said, it's not a long movie. It's 1 hour and 40 minutes, which is like by modern standards is. Pretty like
no, it's not tight. It's not a long movie, but for what it is a long movie.
Yeah, I mean, I think the original was probably 1 hour 20, and this was 1 hour 40.
It would make sense to be 1 hour 20. Yeah, this film could have been. I'd say it sits at either a high 6 or a low 7 for me, and that's still
That's not that far from 8.
Yeah, it's still pretty. It's pretty good, but the end really did. Kind of sour me on it.
See, my counterpoint to that is it is an homage of those 50s horror movies that's like a feature.
Yeah.
It's like it goes on like too long of like, okay, we get it. Like you've set up the premise is the most interesting part. And like, and then they have to figure out what to do with the rest of the movie and they don't really know.
Right.
They kind of have.
They kind of wander around. And Yeah.
So. Okay. So I think we both agree that it's a good movie, though.
Yeah.
It's enjoyable.
Look, it was my wife's birthday yesterday as we record this. And and we had a very nice day. And this movie really did cap it off. Nicely. A lot of times I'll have to watch. It's such a fucking job to be a horror movie reviewer. That's me being stupid. It's a pretty sweet deal. But you know, when it is something you do on a weekly basis, it can't, and your significant other doesn't have to, it can become a little bit of a bore for them. You know, they're like, what do we have to watch tonight? You know, cause we're both sitting at the same TV. What are we watching? And I told her I could watch this on my phone. She's like, I'll give it a shot. And, you know, a lot of times it'll just be too heavy. You know, you get a movie in there that just leaves a real rotten taste in your mouth or something. Like, this was delightful. Both of us enjoyed it and were laughing until she fell asleep for the last half. And which it's not a remark on the movie. She does that every night.
Right.
But yeah, it was a good cap to the day.
Yeah.
I've been watching Spaceballs. And it felt like fucking, I was like, Jesus Christ, this is an accurate redo of
it. It also capped off Portland Horror Film Festival. Like, it was the last feature of the festival. And I'll tell you what. So that's the thing that stands out to me, too, because again, we're not huge fans of independent horror. And so for me to go to the Portland Horror Film Festival, like, you watch the movies and you're like, okay, I get it. Yeah. Like, it's a budget thing and they're doing their own thing. It's different than mainstream. And some of it is pretty quality, but to be honest, like, it doesn't maintain my attention that much. And most of the time I was like on Reddit while I was watching the stream. This one, like, I was had already like gotten to the groove of like, I have it on in case we want to comment on it. But I'm still kind of distracted. This one pulled me out and was like, I hear things that are very, very funny. I'm like, that is,
yeah,
that's great. And like, even with my attention split, this was a great movie. And then I rewatched it for this episode with 100% attention, and it's still great.
Yeah.
It was even better.
Yeah. Normally, independent horror, it's kind of...
And there's a blockage.
A big sausage.
It is. It's like a big sausage of...
Shit.
Sausage of shit. No offense to anybody.
No offense. There's some people and some podcasts that absolutely love every attempt at horror and like will appreciate every little
God bless
choice,
them.
Every little difference of, you know, some slasher. And it's just not interesting enough for me. But this one was great. Pulled it off really. Okay, so let's just briefly do some internal business. You know, I don't know if you are a longtime listener or you just listen to us talking about a movie that you haven't seen for the first time. But we do have ways to monetize this free podcast that we put out and put a lot of effort into. One of those main things that can get you a lot of value is our Patreon page. Go to patreon.com/horrormovietalk. And we've got a lot of cool... perks for different tiers. The most popular one is probably our afterpod, where we leave the mics running and talk about various and sundry topics, personal stuff and unfinished conversations from the podcast that you can check out, and lots of other perks that might be of interest.
Yeah, you can also vote on one movie a month with other patrons to see, you know, what to guide our ship and determine what we watch.
Yeah, a lot of people have suggestions for movies for us to watch, and there's only, you know, we only have room for 52 a year.
Yeah.
And so it's pretty limited.
Pretty tight.
But if you really want to have specific input, there's a way to do that with Patreon. Also, if you like horror movies, you should check out Shudder. It's a horror streaming service. Use code HMT at checkout to get a 30-day free trial. You've probably heard of Shudder. You can also support the podcast. If you're going to buy anything on Amazon, click through the link in the button in our header for horrormovietalk.com. It says buy on Amazon, and we'll get a little tiny taste of that.
Check out our resident artist, Dustin Goble. He's a professional artist who fucks so hard. Thank you, Daddy. He also takes commissions.
If he fucks you, you'll be like,
oh God! Oh Jesus Christ!
He also takes commissions for artwork from HMT fans, so contact him at dgoebel00, that's at D-G-O-E-B-E-L 00 on Instagram, and make your artistic dreams come true, baby. Tell him HMT sent you.
Last thing, we did just open a shop on horrormovietalk.com, so you can check out what we have offered there. We got stickers. We might, as of this recording, have t-shirts. I don't know. They're in the works, at the very least.
We're getting all the sizes of t-shirts, even...
pretty thick.
Even thick ones, baby!
All right, that's enough business. Let's get into spoilers.
Like a COVID.
I love that.
I'm excited to talk to the filmmakers of this. I think we're going to talk to... we haven't recorded the interview yet, but I'm pretty sure we'll have the director and the writer
You watched interviews about this, or, you know, you did the Portland Horror Film Festival.
Yeah, there's a Q&A after. I don't think I watched all of it, but there was enough that was, like, I can remember.
Did you catch where they filmed it?
They filmed it in Portland.
Okay. I was going to say, I was like, oh, that's the fucking hill to OHSU right there.
Oh, really?
I'm almost certain. When he goes careening around those corners, that looks like the goddamn hill up to OHSU.
Yeah, one of my questions was what forest is that they're running through? And that might be the answer to it.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, it's filmed in the Pacific Northwest. That's why it was such a, you know, darling of Portland Horror Film Festival. And a lot of the cast...
Not only it was just good.
Yeah. And a lot of the cast is Portland natives. There's a couple people that were cast on Grimm, which if you don't know, is filmed in Portland, or was filmed in Portland.
Was. I don't think it is anymore. What's his name? Green is from Louisiana. I looked that up.
Oh, really?
Yeah. The lead actor of this is, he's got a smoke show, headshot on his IMDb.
Yeah. He looks like Gambit, man. He would be a great Gambit.
Oh my God, dude, he is goddamn Gambit. Dude, he's from Louisiana.
Yeah. Mon chéri.
Oh my God, dude.
Yeah,
Green, if you hear the sound of my voice, you're welcome. We expect 5%.
Anyways, he's great. Yeah, the headshot on his IMDb.
You control who you get cast as.
Yeah. The headshot on IMDb does not look very much like what he is in this movie. And
no, it's goddamn. He's fucking. Oh man. Yeah, what's his name?
Oh, you know.
Yeah, no.
Something Green. Patrick Green. Patrick D. Green.
Yeah, if you guys want to look up Patrick D. Green on IMDb, or I should say you ladies, he's a real smoke show of a dude. His picture on there anyway.
Yeah. Patrick Green, the original director of the original, his last name was Green. I wonder if there's any relation. Probably not.
Probably not. Green's pretty common.
So... Yeah, this movie opens up with the basically exact same credits as the original. And throughout the whole film, it uses the original soundtrack of the 1962 The Brain That Wouldn't Die.
For a moment in the opening credits, I was a little alarmed because I was like, oh, shit, is this the wrong one? Yeah. I was like, because it's such... And then Carrie's like, is this the old one? And I was like... No, there's too many women in the credits for this to be. We're good. They're just reenacting.
I think I saw Darnell in the credits, so that's not going to fly back then.
Right. Yeah.
So, it's like it sets the tone that this is going to be exactly like the original. And then it opens up and it's in color. But really, it's a scene by scene remake. And I was shocked at how close it was. Like, even
you went back and watched the.
I watched like I wanted to watch the whole movie, but I didn't have time to because I procrastinate. But I watched like the MST3K best of clips for this movie.
Yeah, yeah.
And I recognize every scene. So there was a couple lines that I was like, "Well, that's got to be a wink for this one, or that's got to be specific to this one." That weren't. It was in the original. Like. We're not going to have test tube babies. Yeah. That was in the original movie. I'm like, really?
She means... I know. That's actually a pretty brilliant move for a couple reasons. I was thinking about it. Probably a lot of that soundtrack is public domain by now. So they didn't pay anything for it.
Yeah, The Brain That Wouldn't Die and the soundtrack are public domain.
Brilliant.
So, like, you can stream it on YouTube. Like, I could have watched it.
Yeah, so you don't... Automatically, you get a great score that's free.
Yeah. You know what? The other movie that does that, like, used the original script of another movie, and then the original lines sometimes were just funny enough on their own, was Airplane.
What?
Airplane was based on a movie from the 50s.
No shit.
That was basically the same story, and they used some of the lines from it that are iconic to Airline, but they were the original... Airplane. that were originally in the original one. So, like, the lines where they're discussing how everyone that ate fish on the plane is in danger or whatever, that whole like interchange is in the original.
I'll be damned.
Yeah, it's interesting. You can look on YouTube the comparison of airplane and the original
and airline
and see that. So this is doing the same thing. It's using the same most of the same script to accomplish the same purpose. So yeah, it starts out pretty generic. You got your mad scientist or doctor, but you know, it starts out like seems pretty reasonable. He's like, hey, there's no danger. This is a dead body. Let me experiment on it.
Yeah, to be clear, it's science. Two doctors doing some sort of surgery on a guy, and they're losing him. And then he dies. Oh no! And the younger man says, we'd be silly not to do my thing. And they're like, but why? Have some respect for the dead. And he's like, wouldn't it be most respectful to bring him back to life? And he's got a point. So they let him do it, and lo and behold, he brings him back to life.
Mm-hmm.
It's incredible. He performs a miracle of science.
Yeah. And it's a father-son doctor duo.
Yeah. After they have their high five moment, you learn that he's really, it's a father-son duo. I can't remember the line. What was the line? It was pretty, thanks, Dad. I was like, oh, wait, what?
Yeah, there's one of the first.
Oh, dude, when he makes that incision. When he makes that incision in the guy, in their first patient, he's like, okay, careful, easy. And then just a fire hydrant of blood just spurting him in the face and face. And then it stops for a moment, and the nurse carefully reaches over and dabs a small, his eyelid. Like, thank you, nurse. And then he makes one more cut and...
Yeah.
That set the tone for the whole thing. I was like, this is awesome. I'm very happy with this.
Yeah, that's the first gag of the movie, and it's pulled off perfect.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
So yeah, it sets the tone really early on. Another one, the other gag is when they get out of the operating room, they're in their scrubs, and they both just rip them off, and they're wearing like a full tailored suit.
Yeah, almost a tuxedo, like one step below a tuxedo.
Like I said before, it's really reminiscent of Reanimator and Young Frankenstein. It's right there in the same tone.
Okay, so maybe I wasn't watching Reanimator in the right mindset, because I mean, yeah,
Reanimator is more straight, definitely.
Okay, okay.
It's not like trying to be a comedy, but you could say that's a comedy because it's very
borrows heavily from the 50s and 60s tropes of mad scientist, not 50s, like 30s to 60s.
It's like saying like Evil Dead 2, you could say is a comedy, but it's not
straight,
like specifically trying to be funny.
Right, right.
There are funny parts in it. Just, yeah. And there are some gags.
Wait until you hear next week's AfterPod for a big, big argument on what belongs where.
So, I mean, there's a lot of like really great gags to talk about. One of the, let me see. Yeah, lots of visual gags. So there's stuff like, maybe we can just talk about them all here. Well, I don't know. He's talking about his fiance, and they're talking about the sexy sex times, and then his fiance leaves, and he's like, I'm really, like, pent up. She's really puritanical, and, you know, there's manly needs.
Yeah.
That, you know, and he says, I feel like I'm about to, and then it cuts to a champagne bottle popping.
And it was a very pretty shot too. It was a well done close up to bring in the background shot of the champagne bottle.
Right.
Like, well done.
Right. And then they're at this dinner, and then Bill has to go to the country house where his experiments are, and he's taking his fiance with him, and they're going down this windy road, and while they're driving down, there are several road signs that say slow down, please, for the love of God, don't go fast.
Here's your last chance, dope.
And he's like speeding, and then, you know, rolls over the car, and a horrible tragic car accident, And he wakes up and looks next to him, and his wife's decapitated body is just splurting blood from the neck stump.
He's like, God damn it. So this is actually, I wanted to talk to you about this, because in a couple episodes ago on the Afterpod, we were talking, you and I, as we do, about things, risks that you are willing to take that I was not.
Right.
And one of them, Bryce...
I'm glad you brought this up, because I have a really good counterpoint.
No, I know what your counterpoint is, and it is a solid counterpoint. Uh-huh. So this is a situation where you would decide, it's time to put on my seatbelt.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, when the driver is careening around corners, and you're obviously like, hey, maybe you should just slow down. That's when you reach over to put your seatbelt on. But what are situations where Bryce does not wear seatbelts?
Yeah, if...
No one tried this at home.
Yeah, no one tried this at home, and I've been chastised by our patrons.
Yeah,
you know,
and rightfully so.
Specifically Jessica, that I need to wear my seatbelt at all times. Sure. I mean, yes, everyone wants to be safe. It's safer to be safe. Let's agree on that. But sometimes...
But at what cost? The cost of Bryce's freedom? No.
Yes. I'm very much like, for this topic, I'm like the people that complain about wearing masks in public.
Yeah, you are.
How dare you make me wear my seatbelt? don't chime that at me. I really like the fact that my car is like back in the late 90s, 2000s, because it doesn't yell at you for not wearing your seatbelt.
Here's a question for you.
Okay, here's the scenario that I give wearing the seatbelt.
Make sure to answer that.
I live about 2 miles away from my parents, and if I'm going...
Through pretty much only neighborhoods.
Yeah.
Not even, I mean, unless you cop onto that road over there, not even really streets.
Yeah, 9th Avenue is a significant street, but it's not
really an artery.
It's not a main artery. Yeah. It's like the main vein that comes off an artery.
Yeah.
But like 90% of the travel is in like, you know, windy, cul-de-sac type suburban neighborhoods. So 2 miles away, I would go there every day, and I don't really care about wearing a seatbelt for that.
Do you relish that moment? Are you specifically like, yeah, not putting on my seatbelt? Feels good.
No, I just do the calculation in my head. I was like, I don't really need to wear a seatbelt.
And it's and why do you do that calculation? Is it because the act of reaching over is just like, that's too much right now?
I don't know.
You're realizing the subtle things that these say about you a little bit here.
Huh? Yeah, I'm a bad boy.
That's right, baby. I don't wear my fucking seatbelt.
So, no, I mean, I do the calculations like...
Do me, Bryce.
I'm going like 20 miles per hour, maybe. Mm-hmm. And it's like for a short ride, and there's not going to be people careening around that are going to hit me, most likely.
Bryce, unsafe at any speed.
Right. And I've sat through those... Yeah. I've sat through that, like, training, because I've gotten pulled over for not wearing my seatbelt before.
That Nader reference. Yeah. Okay, so riddle me this. Remember those cars that they made in the 90s, or maybe it was the 80s, that would put your seatbelt on for you?
Uh-huh.
You know, it was like you open the door and the seatbelt goes bleep.
Yeah, I had one. I had an Accord that did that.
Okay. If that was the situation, you'd wear your seatbelt all the time.
Yeah.
Okay, so we've narrowed it down. It's literally the act of reaching up and pulling down across you a bridge too far.
You know what I hate is like the seatbelt that it gets to the end and then it starts ratcheting up.
That's fair.
Like I hate that.
Yeah, it's the worst. Like being trapped in a grave.
Yeah. And I'm a big boy, so that happens pretty often. You know, so
this is okay. Now I'm with you. Now I'm fully on board. Not only am I on board, I fucking support you.
That's all it took, huh?
That's all it took. I just needed to understand. That's okay. All I ever ask is just get me to where you are.
Well, I had another counterpoint to like make myself feel better.
Mm-hmm.
But number one, all of my cars have airbags. So, I mean, there's another line of defense. Like, are we just going to say airbags are going to do nothing? Like, really, they're going to be more safe than anything else.
Maybe.
And then the other counterpoint is, like, you ride a motorcycle, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, that's way more dangerous than not wearing your seatbelt in a car.
Hey, no argument there.
Yeah.
Yeah. No argument there at all.
Yeah.
These are all calculated risks, like you said. Yeah. But now that I understand, it all makes sense now.
Right.
It just didn't make sense before.
Right. Okay.
And you understand why I ride a motorcycle? Because it's a phenomenal experience.
Yeah, because it's badass. You want that pussy.
Every time I ride around, leave my wife and kids behind, I just think about how little pussy I'm going to get for leaving my wife and kids behind.
And you just look at the line in the street, all those...
Boobs, boobies, tits, titties, tick old bitties, machines.
They're all just... They're all just flashing you. They're just doing the chainsaw tits.
Take me. Yeah, okay. So,
anyways, the brain that wouldn't die.
So they crash the car. She loses her head. He's like, God damn it. Another fiance lost to a head, a car decapitation.
So he grabs up the head and
he grabs the head, but he doesn't get the body. He could have both.
Well, the body, was the body burned or was that in the original?
No, it was just squirting blood. Yeah. But it was heavy. I mean, she was a big girl or anything, but...
Yeah, I mean, you wouldn't be able to run with taking that. So he grabs the head like a football and, like, runs down.
I kind of prefer, a little meat on those bones anyway. That's all
I'm saying. So he runs to his lab, and him and his assistant work to save her head, and then it reveals that... She's a head on a table.
It's kind of, and it also reveals that it kind of blows to be a head on a table. She's in constant pain. Like, she's just like, oh, end my fucking life. He's like, no.
Yeah, that's one of the great lines, because that's from the original, is, let me die. Let me die. And then this one, the assistant immediately goes, I think we should listen to her.
She's like, this is an abomination in front of God.
Yeah.
Let me just say, she is stellar.
Yeah,
like, her ability to be dead on tone, she understood what she needed to do to make that character, to make fun of that character, pay homage to that character, make it funny, and just the whole experience with her, perfect. She was dead on.
Yeah. Yeah, she was great. Especially the laugh, like, it's pitch perfect.
I cannot. It was so good. Everything about her performance was dead on.
Yeah, and this feels so much like a 50s science horror thing, because they have
beaker science.
They do have beaker science. Yeah. Complete with food coloring and water. Yeah. even dried ice.
Yeah. Lots of allusions are made to his not super successful attempts at reviving dead flesh, including, not the least of all, his assistant's arm. It's like a mutant.
His flipper.
Flipper.
His thalidomide.
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 Yeah. We didn't mention on the the crash. I find this so funny on the second viewing, like, because it was just silly the first viewing, but I realized it would have taken no effort or cost to do it the other way. They're careening down the hill, and what makes them crash is there is a kitten in the middle of the road. In the movie,
I didn't even catch it.
In the movie, it's a stuffed toy. It's just like a stuffed kitten toy, and I think they might play a sound effect. I'm like, meow.
But oh yeah.
But it would have taken no effort to have an actual cat,
right?
Just sit there, but it's like, we got a time crunch. We can't wait for a cat to just sit calmly for 20 seconds.
You know, we got to ask the writer about.
Yeah, we got to do that. But it's such a great.
Did you write that in?
I will. But that's another great choice. Do you have any favorite moments?
There was a lot of really great moments. I think my very, very, very favorite moment of the movie was when he sends his assistant out to get a hooker. And his assistant comes back with this beautiful...
With Lady Marmalade.
Emily. This beautiful, ebony, gorgeous lady who was black. Uh-huh. And
full, like, figured.
Yeah.
Because he gives him the specific instructions to
sure
bring...
Make sure she got big cans.
Yeah, make sure she's got big titties.
And so he comes back and... They're like, he's like, God damn it. Like, he's like, he like brings him aside and he's like, look, it's not going to work. Why won't it work? The colors don't match. And she was like, oh, hell no. I don't know. What do you mean? And
that's some racist ass bullshit is what that is.
That's racist bullshit. And he goes, my assistant, tell her I'm not racist.
And he's racist.
Like, well, you did just discriminate against her based on race. And he's like, well, but it's not the, you get to, and it, I was like, as soon as I saw her, I just lost it. That was
great.
It killed me. It absolutely killed me. And the fact that they had the balls to do something, it's weird that that's a ballsy move now, but I did feel like that it does take some balls, especially shooting in Portland. I don't know. Things are fucking whack right now.
Yeah, there's a couple added scenes that weren't in the original that I think really work and make it better. So that, I'm pretty sure that's one of them.
Wow.
That wasn't in there. The other scene is the hooker where it goes bad, where she attacks him and she runs after him.
Yeah, lots of guns.
With a shotgun.
Pro gun stuff.
Which is great. And then the whole, like, bar scene is not in the original. Like, where the guy's like, look at that guy. I can't remember what
says, you look like you need a drink. Yeah, so at this point, he begins the search, right? He begins this search for a girl with the perfect body. And at first, it's brilliant, and it really works. But they do drag it on a little too long. I think even you can admit the search for the body is just too much.
Yeah, that's the thing. That's where the added stuff is. The stuff that they added was more entertaining than the stuff that wasn't added. So
great,
the stuff
so take
that,
off the stuff that doesn't work.
Right, the stuff that wasn't added was like the whole scene in the burlesque theater kind of thing where the girls are fighting, which was great. That was a great cat fight.
Oh, that was spectacular. These two burlesque girls, he's in the back room with one of them and he's like, and the whole problem that he keeps running into over and over again is he needs to not be able to be fingered. by anybody, he can't be seen in any of these places.
He can't be the last person seen with the person he's going to take.
With a person that he's going to make go missing. And so he's in there, he's talking to one girl, they're about to take off. And then another girl shows up and he's like, God damn it. And so now he's got to take off. He's not interested in having sex with either of them, even though they seem to both be all about it.
Not yet. Later.
Why not just make a truck stop here? Right. But
a pit stop. And I mean, is
no, really, you call it a truck stop.
I mean, isn't pit stop more apropos?
No, you go pee in a pit stop at a truck stop. You fuck.
But there's a pit. Never mind.
You fuck in the pit.
All right.
So he keeps these two girls begin fighting over him, and they do the most corny. It's like a fight turning into a porn scene.
Right.
Like, very intentionally, like,
I can't get up.
Yeah, it's
fell over this armoire.
I dare you to slap my ass. Like, I'm going to smack you right in the butt. And then she's like,
thank you, Daddy.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was pretty funny, too. I did like that scene.
So they have
and she keeps referring to her pussy a lot. She's like, can you pet my pussy? And she's like, I hate bringing my cat to work, but I just can't stand the thought of him being at home all alone.
Yeah. So a majority of this movie is trying to locate the body. And there's some like funny moments where he's like, because he's realized like, it's a funny premise to where like, you have your fiance, but you can replace her body with anyone you choose. So, of course, you're going to,
shop around.
And then he lands on this former acquaintance that's now a pinup model.
Yeah.
And then the guy that is obvious an homage to Hugh Hefner, because his name is Hugh.
Yeah.
Like, kind of like nudges him. He's like, she's pretty great, but her face, everything but her head, And he's like, no problem.
Not a big deal.
She's got a big scar on her face.
Yeah.
And
he promises that he can get rid of that scar for free. And then she's like, oh, why are you being so nice to me? And he's like, and he jokingly is like, well, because I'm going to steal you away to my mad scientist lab and take your head off and put on my fiance's head onto it. And she's like, you're right. I shouldn't. Yeah. I should trust you more.
So part of the charm of this movie is the lighting. Like, it's a very budget movie, and they set a lot of tone by these, like, it's kind of reminiscent of Creepshow. Like, the kind of purple lighting, or like the colored lighting in the background.
It is
like
reminiscent of Creepshow. It's also reminiscent of very budget movies generally.
The other thing that reveals the budget.
If you've ever seen the movie Danzig made, it looks kind of like that.
Did you watch that?
I watched bits and pieces.
Because I think Red Letter Media, reviewed it.
Oh, it's bad.
And they just tore it apart.
It's the worst.
Yeah.
It's the worst.
What was I going to say? Oh, the other revealing thing shows the budget, but is also kind of charming, is that the cop, when he comes to his door, it's very obviously a green screen, because you see this green halo around everything, and you see the outdoors in the background. It's obviously a green screened in.
Yeah.
And it's not, it's like a YouTuber or
accurate,
or like a game streamer.
Maybe a little bit better than that.
Yeah. Maybe I don't want to decry him, but it's, there's obviously a green halo or light being broadcast onto him.
Yeah, the one distracting thing for me. The lighting was a little distracting, but then the green screen didn't even enter into my consciousness almost at all. There was one part where it did, but the other big one for me was the door to keep the thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Was where he bangs on it and the wood comes off.
Looked like a door that I made for the shed that I built.
Uh-huh.
And that's not saying a lot. It's a poorly constructed door made by someone who is not a craftsman.
Yeah. I mean, there's a great moment where the monster. So, yeah, I guess we didn't set that up. So in the wife's head is on the table, but there's also allusions to this monster held in this closet. And this door that you never get to see until the very, very
green light seeping out from around the door.
And there's just a little window
that
you can open and see in. And that little window, when the monster is banging on the door, the frame that held the little door popped off. So it was very obvious that it was just glued on or something like that.
Yeah.
And it was that, it's charming. It's it was funny because you see the seams.
The set designer was kind of like,
I have to return some videotapes.
It's like, I gotta go.
So my favorite scene was the full scene is great. So the cop comes and confronts him and Bill basically shoos him away or whatever, and it's not a big deal. And then when the cop investigates a little
more, I knew this was gonna be it, because this was my second favorite with the other cop.
It's the same cop.
Oh, I was talking
oh,
about...
Oh, no. Yeah, there's that moment, okay, too. Okay. No, there's a... Yeah, that's a pretty great moment, too. He compliments the junior cop, and there's this, three Mississippi, and he's like, thanks. He's so overjoyed.
Yeah.
So, no, the main detective comes back and confronts Bill again at the house with all the evidence that he has of that it's definitely him that had that crash and that dead body that was definitely his fiance.
Yeah.
and Bill is being polite or whatever.
Yeah.
And he, so the full, let's see, what is it? I can't remember what comes first, but there's a great like sequence and lines where the cop is like, "You're going to get fingered. I'm going to finger you good." And like,
"Your dad fingered you, and he fingered you real good. You hear? He didn't have to, but he fingered you."
And then Bill was like, "Can he please stop saying fingering?
Can you stop saying that?
Fingered." And then he caps it off with my favorite line of the whole movie, which made me burst out in laughter the first time I saw it, and it still worked the second time, was... he was trying to, you know, shut the door on the cop and usher and like shoo him away.
Yeah.
And he's like, "So, you know, if you don't have, if you're not going to arrest me, I would ask you kindly, sir, to fuck off."
Yeah. Yeah, that was pretty good.
I'll try to get the actual clip.
That was great.
But it's,
no, you did it. You did it.
"I have nothing more to say to you. Now, unless you have an arrest warrant, I would kindly ask that you fuck off."
Just like the shift in tone to like a modern,
yeah,
it was pitch perfect. Yeah, it was pretty great. Good.
So this was a fairly simple movie. So you might forgive us if our review doesn't last a real long time, because it's, I mean, we've kind of covered most of it. But I mean, at this point, how does it end?
So the head on the table, his fiance, is able to kind of like mind meld with this monster and get him to crash through the door,
yeah,
and attack, and he kind of pushes him down, and then there's like a beaker of acid,
yeah,
that falls on Bill's face, which is actually a great effect.
Yeah like pouring water onto a camera looks cool.
Well, pours water onto a camera, and then it does the reverse shot of like the skull melting away, and it was legit like a great special effect.
Yeah, it was good practical effects on that. I almost forgot to mention that every time she's hatched her diabolical plan to escape, and she, and every time she wants to punctuate it, she goes, "Ha ha ha." She does that. That killed me every time. Every time she laughed, I was like, this is brilliant.
Yeah. So I think the filmmakers asked me not to completely spoil the ending.
Yeah.
But they tack on a little more than what the original has. The original ends with the monster carrying away the pinup model, mm-hmm. and that just goes to black. And there's a little more. There's another
Don't
gag.
Say anything.
There's another gag, and then there's another ending. So it's great. So I would really encourage you, if there's a film festival that is going to include The Brain That Wouldn't Die, it is worth it to go see.
And you know, support this independent horror, you know?
Yeah.
Because I was just
I'm just a happy camper. Rocking and a rolling.
A happy camper.
So now, well, I mean, I guess we should say who should see this.
Yeah, final recommendation for this would be, man, if you're a fan of comedy, there's not so many horror elements to this. It's mostly an homage, so don't expect to be scared or anything like that.
Yeah, if you like old B movies from like the 60s and 50s,
hole in one.
Yeah,
this is
definitely see this one.
You know, also if you're from the Pacific Northwest, this will feel very local.
Yeah.
This will feel local as fuck.
So, yeah, go check it out. So now we are pleased to welcome to the show and talk to the filmmakers of The Brain That Wouldn't Die 2020. Derek Carl, the director, and Hank Huffman, the producer and writer. So excited to get to talk to you guys about this film. Had a great time watching it and reviewing it.
Thanks for having us.
Welcome, studio audience. Give them a great round of applause.
Yay!
So where are you guys calling from?
I am in Brooklyn, New York right now.
Sweet. Oh, geez. How's that?
It's better now. We got through the worst of it, for sure.
Oh, good.
but I basically haven't left my bedroom in 4 months. So it's been interesting.
And that's the voice of Derek, just FYI, everyone. And Hank, where are you calling in from?
I am calling from Portland, Oregon.
Oh, sweet.
Just across the river.
Yeah, we're in Vancouver, Washington.
Oh, okay. Yeah, not far at all.
Yeah, so the Brain That Wouldn't Die was filmed. Was it all filmed in Portland or just most of it?
All of it.
Awesome.
Well, 99.9%. There were like two quick little shots that I did in my apartment here.
Oh, nice.
But like a couple years after the main production while I was editing. But yeah, most of it was in Portland.
What made you choose Portland?
Well, I used to live in Portland, and I will again pretty soon here. I'm moving back at the end of the month. Okay. But I just had a lot of film contacts in Portland, and Hank was still living in Portland at the time. And it just made sense to head back and work with the people that I knew really well. And then on top of that, it's just way cheaper to film in Portland than it is to film here in New York.
Imagine.
We filmed in like this old warehouse that they used to use for like bingo nights or something. And we were able to build a couple different sets, and we got the whole place for like $1,000 a month. And here in New York, it would have been at like $1,000, maybe $2,000 a day.
Whoa.
For that kind of place.
Wow.
So it wouldn't have been possible to do it here.
So how long was the shoot?
It was 18 days of filming.
Oh, nice.
I got to know, where did your inspiration, like, well, I guess a better question was, how was this project, this movie, how was it born? Did you decide that you wanted to make a remake of The Brain That Wouldn't Die, and then you decided you wanted to make it funny? Or did you decide you wanted to make a funny movie and then go, yeah, The Brain That Wouldn't Die?
So The Brain That Wouldn't Die has been one of my favorites since I was probably 8 or 9 the first time I saw it, seeing the Mystery Science Theater,
right,
3000 version that you could rent like individual episodes from Blockbuster back then. Uh-huh. And my mom rented that and the Mystery Science Theater movie. Yeah. The theatrical film where they watch This Island Earth. But anyway, Brain That Wouldn't Die was one of the few Mystery Science selections that I legitimately loved the movie and would later own it without the robots commentary. And I honestly think the inspiration was finally watching Gus Van Sant's Psycho remake, which is like the oddest choice anybody's ever made to do a shot for shot remake of Hitchcock. You're almost admitting up front that nobody would do it better.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. You're just trying to recapture the exact same lightning in the same bottle, but he would add little touches.
Like, yeah, it's like, no, he's masturbating, in case you couldn't get that subtle.
Because that's what the original was missing. I think we can all agree that you're like, this is good, but if Vince Vaughn was masturbating in this movie, that would cinch it.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say that I thought it would be funny for somebody to approach The Brain That Wouldn't Die with the same reverence Gus Van Sant had for Psycho.
it absolutely was. It you guys pulled it off. Like, it was we're not typically huge fans of independent horror. And so I was sitting down to this kind of going, I don't know. And then the first scene just hooked me, and I was there for the rest of the thing, and I was like, this is fabulous. And by the way, This Island Earth, are you cooking in there? No. Are you making it in a Rossiter? No.
You know, that's another movie that could use a remake, quite honestly. I think that's a pretty neat movie. And Mystery Science Theater does that one a little bit dirty with the editing. They make it seem like a more ridiculous movie than it is when you take, you know, a good 15 minutes out of it.
So you guys are doing the festival circuit right now. What's the upcoming showings and upcoming festivals that you're planning for?
Well, it's a weird time to be going to festivals right now. The next one that we were supposed to be going to is the Newport Beach Film Festival, Newport Beach, California. It's a really big, prestigious one. We're excited about it, but Gavin Newsom just shut down all the theaters again. So we haven't got the official word yet, but we're kind of predicting that it's going to be either delayed or canceled or put online like the Portland Horror Film Fest was.
Yeah.
Any of the ones that are overseas, I think it's a fair bet that we won't be going to those either. So,
yeah. Yeah, there's another one that we're not allowed to announce yet, but we won't be able to attend that, unfortunately.
So go ahead and announce it. Doesn't matter. We were going to Cannes, but, you know, unfortunately.
I got a question. How much did Mel Brooks factor into your efforts on this, in your inspirations?
Yeah, I think the easiest way to explain to the actors what we were going for was to reference Young Frankenstein.
Yeah,
that was the easiest in for a lot of people to get what we're going for, because it's not a common type of script to come across, I don't think. But yeah, they got it.
I mean, when I was watching it and writing up the review for this film, that was the number one film that came up was Young Frankenstein. It just felt really, really similar in tone and reverence for the source material. And then also it reminded me a little less, but a little bit about Reanimator, which is kind of over the top and tongue in cheek. It really comes across great.
Reanimator was definitely an influence, and that actually kind of was the tipping point for making us want to make a color version of The Brain That Wouldn't Die instead of black and white, which everyone seemed to expect we were going to do.
Yeah. No, it's great. It's in Technicolor.
When you see Bill's serum, when you see him holding the syringe, it's a glowing green substance that's right out of Reanimator,
right?
And a million other
was that an after effect? How did you achieve that, like, glowy sort of, because it looked like it was intentionally highlighted?
It was a special effect that I did in post. So
mini lightsaber.
It's literally exactly what it was. Like, I am not a special effects person myself. I am a pro editor, but not necessarily special effects. So I looked up a tutorial of how to do lightsabers, and that's how I did that.
Nice. It added to the ambiance of the whole thing, I gotta say. I was like,
Well, Derek had a good point, which is that this serum ends up playing a significant enough role where, beyond just the allusion to Reanimator and similar films, you really want them to notice it as a specific substance.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So we made it glow to bring a little bit more attention to itself. Yeah.
So I noticed, and I know I listened to some of the after panel interview on Portland Horror Film Festival. First, before I get into that, I just want to say, attending Portland Horror Film Festival, your guys' movie was absolutely the most enjoyable for me.
Thank you.
As like a, you know, a streaming event, it was very easy to get distracted and just like have read it up as the films were going in another window. but yours definitely held my attention the most. And one of the things that you said in the panel interview was about the budget, and it's so impressive to me that the original budget for The Brain That Wouldn't Die was around $60,000, I think it says on IMDb, and yours was $80,000. So
right.
With inflation, the original would have been around $500,000 compared to $80,000. So it's really impressive. How much of that budget was spent on beakers?
Surprisingly little amount. In all seriousness, the vast majority of our budget went to just paying cast and crew. And so in terms of beakers, our production designer, Tiffany Ayers, she did so much with almost no money. It was very impressive.
Yeah, it was great. I mean, even it's funny. It's you guys picked a perfect movie to remake, because it's not like the sets were super elaborate on the original.
No,
you know,
no. There's a amazing thing with, you know, if you're making a low budget movie, making an intentionally B movie, it's a good way to go, because you know, the sparse sets just lends to the style. Any mistakes you make, anything that, you know, you had to rush through in production just adds to the style.
Right.
You know, it all just kind of helps in the end.
The period piece is less helpful to that end.
Oh, yeah. No kidding, man. You had all these classic cars all over the place.
Yeah, that one we got a little creative with. So, myself and two of our producers, Daniel Tracy and Alex Tiefenthaler, we went down to there's a local car show in Portland, and we just went down there and started handing out flyers. And all the cars that you see in the movie are people that just volunteered and let us use them for free.
Oh, sweet. You know, I'm really glad that so much of the budget went to the actors and the crew, because that was my next question, is how did you get such a fucking solid cast? I mean Patrick Green killed in the, like,
yeah,
I was so fucking impressed with his performance.
Hank and I have talked about this multiple times. We're like, if any single person in our film had told us no, we would have been screwed. Like, we didn't have any alternatives. Like, we were like, this is exactly the one person who's going to be perfect for this. And across the board, everyone said yes for some weird reason, even though, like, we didn't really have much work to show for ourselves. We didn't, like, people weren't clamoring to work with us at the time.
We got really lucky in that the very first short film we made, the handful of people we happened to work with were involved in every subsequent project we've done. And even an actor friend of ours, Jeffrey Newman, he has he was given his pick of the litter when it came to who do you want to be in this movie. And he ended up playing the blind street preacher, if you recall.
Yeah.
He got the upside down. Sign is upside down. Yeah.
He just about cast the movie. I mean, he's been doing it a long time, and if I'm not mistaken, he was the one who recommended Rachel.
Yeah.
Played Jan in the Pan.
I was just asking him, like, because he's been acting in Portland for a long time, and we didn't know a ton of actors. So I was like, you know, if you got any recommendations, let us know. He recommended Rachel and Patrick and a couple other people who I'm blanking on now. And Robert Blanche and Mia Allen. And so he cast, like, the main cast. The only one we knew from working with before was Jason Reynolds, who played Kurt.
The casting, in terms of casting, like, first of all, they were all great, great actors and actresses. But Rachel Peril Foskett, who was the head the brain, she was a dead ringer for the original movie, and her delivery of the laughter killed me. It slayed me every time.
To be honest, I didn't cast anyone based on like the way they looked compared to the original cast. Rachel's just a phenomenal actress, mm-hmm. and has proven so. She's gone on to do like legit Hollywood stuff since our project. But I remember we did a Kickstarter to raise money for this, and I was putting pictures of the cast and the original people side by side. I was like, oh damn, Rachel and the original actress look exactly the same.
Yeah.
So I don't know if it was subconscious or if it was just coincidence, but it definitely wasn't intentional.
No, that's all. Yeah. I mean, I'm going through the cast in my mind and I can't think of one that's not perfect in the role. Like usually you see in the, like indie horror movies, like some guy that you point out and you're like, that guy's a community theater guy. Like, he was available. That's why he's in here. And yeah. These are all, I mean, just phenomenal. We also discussed on the
even
on
down the, to all the whores.
Yeah, yeah.
We did look out where even the smallest bit parts are played by really competent actors.
Yeah.
We discussed on the podcast that we think that Patrick Green would make a great Gambit if they made a Gambit movie.
Oh my God,
I can see that.
I like it.
From Louisiana, like it's a dead ringer too.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
And his headshot on IMDb is all, you know.
It's oh Gambit-y. Yeah,
it's very.
He's Gambit-y. Got that head shape. Yeah.
What? So speaking a little bit more about the budget, there was two questions I had around that. Number one, just the you know you're talking about. It was easy in terms of like intentionally making a B movie to let something slide. The one that I thought was a great touch was the green screen halo in the doorway with the cop talking to Bill the first time.
That's definitely one of those. It wasn't planned, but we could let it slide.
Right.
And then we just kind of rushed and didn't do a great job with the green screen and it struggled with it in post. And we're like, yeah, screw it.
Yeah, it worked to its benefit, I think.
Yeah, I did too.
And then the other one that was definitely more intentional is the stuffed cat on the roadway as opposed to the real cat.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Was it just a choice of like, we don't want to work with real animals or this is just going to be funnier if it's a stuffed cat?
I think it was a combination of the two. Just trying to get a cat in the road. And then I wanted to be able to see the car approaching it. So there's way to do that safely. Yeah. And then at some point we're just like, what if it's just, do something really silly.
What road
we
was
do
that?
Get a real cat in the movie though.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. The pussy.
Watching the cat fight.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. What road was that, by the way? Or whereabouts was that road that he was careening about on? Because I have a theory. Was that okay. near OHSU?
No. Oh. I know what area you're talking about. Yeah, very similar. This is West Union Road. Out the area, it's like Helvetia, outside of Hillsboro.
Oh, so like kind of Germantown road.
Yes,
area?
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's what my wife said. Damn it. Damn her.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Sorry. Hank had a family friend who let us shoot out at the property. So all the stuff in the woods and all the roads out there was all out there.
Nice.
Which was really, it was kind of emotional for me because their property, that's where I would make little home movies growing up. And so to go back there with a, you know, full cast and crew.
Wow.
I think we scared them because Hank was like, called him up, was like, hey, I want to film something. Can we use your property? And they agreed. And then we showed up with like 20 cars at their place. And they're like, what did we get ourselves into?
They were used to like 3 14-year-olds making a Mortal Kombat fan film.
I see. Yeah.
As one does.
As one does.
Do either of you have a next project that you're interested in working on? Any or, you know, aspirations or what's next?
Oh, we have about 12 projects we hope to work on.
He's not even exaggerating. Like we started working on The Brain 4 years ago. we wrapped production almost 4 years ago. It was November 2016 when we wrapped, wow. And we've just been brainstorming since. So we got a lot. Nice. Maybe the most applicable would be the Trumpy, the pod people.
Oh,
idea.
A Trumpy Dumpy.
Yeah, that was one of my other favorite Mystery Science.
That was one of mine too.
And that's also one of their strongest episodes, just yeah. in terms yeah. of the wow, Trumpy, you can do stupid things. Just about the funniest.
And
it's called evil, kid.
And Mitchell. Mitchell is probably my best one that I,
yeah.
I can't.
Wasn't that me. Right before The Brain That Wouldn't Die? I think that was Joel's last episode.
You know, I don't have a real strong memory for the chronological order of them. I just would watch them on Saturday mornings on Sci-Fi, you know, like,
yeah,
as I'm sure you did yeah. as well. But
what was your guys' favorite gag in the movie? Because there's so many great ones.
Ooh, I think my favorite shot in the whole movie is during the flashback when Bill and Jan are staring lovingly into each other's eyes, love at first sight, and in the background, out of focus, there's an explosion, and you see Kurt flailing around,
yeah.
having just lost his arm.
Yeah, that was good.
I think my favorite, it happens twice, but it's the tearing away the lab coats to reveal the three-piece suits.
Underneath. Oh, man. That opening scene, the opening scene with the surgery just killed me. It opened it so strong that... And it's a really smart move as an independent movie to do something that hooks people so early and just gets them to go, oh yeah, I'm not going to surf around on Netflix for something else. I'm here. Like,
I'm very happy to hear you say that. That's actually a scene I struggled with a little bit in editing. So it's good to hear that it worked for you.
Yeah, it landed.
No, the timing was perfect on that one. Speaking of which, what was there any particular scene that was really hard to film or was stressful for the production to pull off?
The day we were filming where Bill has the head wrapped up in the coat and he's running around the field, it was pouring rain.
Oh.
And we weren't prepared, so the whole crew was just drenched. And we didn't adequately fill out our shot list that day. And so they were like, I think someone called like martini shot, like we're almost done. And I'm like, sorry guys, actually I'm going to need like several more shots. And so we were out in the rain for like a couple hours longer than we were supposed to be. So they weren't very happy with me that day, but I think it was worth it.
I have two more questions. What about you?
No, I think I'm good.
You just mentioned shot list, and then you said martini shot, and these are lingo that I'm not familiar with at all. What are you talking about?
So a shot list is just with the cinematographer and our AD, we kind of lay out all the shots
that we need that day.
Yeah, just so we can kind of schedule, you know, how many production days we're going to need. And the martini shot, it's been so long. I'm blanking now. It's either the last shot of the day or the second to last shot of the day. I'm blanking now. I think it's the last shot of the day when you're on set. You call this is martini shot, meaning we're one shot away from getting drinks.
Are all the shots named? Is there like a German chocolate cake shot?
We should start that.
Okay, so that's a no. I was honestly asking.
The 50th take is the golden shot.
Golden shower yeah. shot.
It's coffee shot is the first shot of the morning.
There you go. Yeah, the espresso shot.
The espresso.
I'm sorry. Do you guys have anything that you wish people asked you on these sorts of things?
Oh man. What do you think, Hank?
I'm trying to think.
Anything you don't get to share and wish that you just could get out?
One thing that I think is interesting that hasn't come up yet is up until filming, I had watched the original Brain That Wouldn't Die one time in my life.
And was that the Mystery Science Theater one or the actual movie?
I've only watched the Mystery Science Theater once after we were done filming.
Oh, wow.
But I, and to this day, I've only seen the original like three or four times. But going into it, so the one time I watched it, Hank called me up and was like, "Hey, I have this film idea, but you need to watch a movie first." And he told me to watch Brain That Wouldn't Die. It's just on YouTube. I watched it and I called him right back and I was like, "It's kind of a bad film, but I love it." Right. And he goes, "That's exactly the response I wanted because I've written a remake of it." And after that, like Hank was the exact opposite. He's watched it so many times. He had it like on a loop, listening to it as a podcast. And I just wanted to be able to like visually do my own thing. I didn't want to be, you know, beholden to whatever they had done in theirs. And so I thought it was a good mix of Hank knowing it super well and me coming into it with fresh eyes. That would be a good mix of like making it our own while being true to the original. I don't think many people will believe me though, because in editing, when I was putting together that little montage during the credits, like matching up our shots with the original, it kind of surprised me how easy that was to do. So many of the shots turned out to be similar to what was in the original.
It's so similar that it's kind of odd. It's not exact. Like I would think if I didn't know any better, I would think, why did they get it so close and then stop at a point instead of, you know, going the little extra? Cause it's odd how much it can look like a shot for shot at times.
Yeah. It feels like a loving homage or a tribute kind of, where, you know, the vast majority of the whole thing is there. But you know, I mean, then you take liberties as you need. And then
It should have been shot for shot and then just have one scene of the main character masturbating. And it would have been perfect.
I'm writing that down for our next film.
Yeah. Thank you. Yes, please do that. And then just my final question is, when and where will people be able to watch this?
Yeah. When do you think it's going to be wide release and what kind of plans do you have for that?
Oh, man, that is completely up in the air because of the whole pandemic situation. We are not allowed to, or at least we don't want to release it widely until after the festival circuit is complete. And the festival circuit just keeps getting delayed and delayed and delayed. We actually got word that one that we had applied to is not even going to happen until August of 2021. So It could be a very, very long festival run potentially. That being said, if it's just a couple outliers that are that long away, we don't want to wait that long. We want people to be able to see it. So we'd probably just drop out of those.
Yeah.
If that was the case.
Yeah. Cause I imagine there's some hype building around it and you want to take advantage of that. So you guys get in contact with us when you have a better idea of, you know, of when it's going to come out and where it's going to come out, and we'll plug it for you.
Thank you. Appreciate that so much. Yeah,
absolutely. We appreciate good independent horror.
Well, I hope people like it as much as you guys. Because there have been times where we've gotten really nervous wondering if there is an audience for this kind of thing.
I mean, there's a void left by Mel Brooks no longer making movies, and this is such a dead ringer for his brand of comedy, and bravo. Like, I really enjoyed it, so I think you guys did a great job.
Yeah.
Well, we gladly accept the mantle of being the new Mel Brooks.
Yes. Yeah.
Now, don't disappoint us.
Ever.
So, thank you so much for coming on the podcast and talking with us. And we really appreciate your labor of love. And you know, it's, I know you guys have been waiting a long time to get this in front of people. And I really hope you, I wish you success on the festival runs and hope to see this on Amazon or streaming services everywhere soon. Cause I think it's great.
Yeah. Thank you so much. We really appreciate it.
Yeah. This Thanks is great.
Well, that was great. Thanks so much to Derek and or Hank for coming on the show.
Yeah. Thank you guys. We sure do appreciate the interview.
We really love your movie and, hope to have you back sometime.
Yeah.
All right. So now let's get into taglines.
Here's
taglines.
Taglines is a game where we come up with alternate taglines for the film we're reviewing that we think are a little better suited.
Well, you know, they can be funny. They can be, man, mostly they just show how...
mostly they're bullshit.
Like we talk a big game about, oh, this should have been this way or that way, but then you ask us to write a fucking tagline for a movie, and it's like, oh, these guys are retarded. So, you know, take everything we say with a grain of salt, because we're just idiots.
Okay. How many do you got?
1, 2, 3, 4.
Okay, so we're even. My first tagline, the brain that wouldn't die. They saved the worst part, her brain and voice. Up top.
Oh, man. Gonna get some hate for that
All
one.
All right.
Can't shut us down. We're independent. Mm-hmm.
You can only stop listening. Please don't stop listening.
Don't stop listening, for love of God. You're gonna... I feel so bad for saying this.
Okay. All right. Okay, here we go.
The brain that wouldn't die. Don't lose your head. I feel so bad.
Oh, boy. One of the
Bryce.
Better quality taglines.
Can you kill me?
Okay. The brain that wouldn't die. When I said I wanted her to give me head, I didn't mean this. Up top.
After that last one, I just...
What do you want me to do?
I've assessed the situation and I'm leaving.
I'm sure they ramp up from there. Sure, they just keep getting better and better.
I think they do. Okay. You got nowhere to go but up. The brain that wouldn't die. Making killing hookers great again.
That's pretty good.
That was all right.
The brain that wouldn't die. The best movie about a beheading since Hereditary.
not wrong. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. The head that wouldn't die. The brain that wouldn't die. Proving that Bryce should wear a seatbelt.
My last one. The brain that wouldn't die. No animals were harmed in the making of this film. It's that little stuffed kitten.
Little kitty. Yeah. The head that wouldn't die. Could you fuck a head? Asking for a friend.
Yes.
Asking for a friend.
Yeah.
I mean,
that was the hard one, because for my original one, I was like, they saved the worst part, the brain and the mouth. I'm like, mouth's not the worst part.
Not the worst. And I mean,
her yapping. Up top. How did we high five at different times?
I like this double high five thing we got going. I got two hands, bro. Uh-huh. Yeah.
We just sit like 2 feet away from each other. Just
really close.
Gazing into each other's eyes.
I've actually been thinking about how we could like reorganize the room so that it was like a quote unquote podcast setup room. And it kind of revolves around that table there. And
yeah, we got to get rid of that desk.
Oh, no. I was saying it revolves around that table. So like take out the, if there's a back of it, take out the back of it and put one of us at one side facing, so, you know, so we're kind of like this, so we can kind of like look diagonally at each other across the desk and kind of have that desk in the middle. Then, you know, camera set up looking that way, looking that way. If we, if at some point we were able to get cameras and.
Yeah, we'll figure it out for video. I think, you know, honestly, the probably the easiest setup is it's not far from what you're saying, but the Two Bears One Cave or the Mommies, whatever.
Yeah.
So just they're like Studio B, where it's just a desk with a TV behind it.
Right.
Like that's a pretty common thing. They're just sitting across from each other talking.
Yeah, and it utilize, that way you can probably save some money by just doing one camera.
Yeah, I think they both, I think they have a three camera setup.
They do.
But yeah, but you can do it with one camera.
Yeah. Anywho.
Yeah.
So.
Sign up for Patreon so we can do a video podcast.
Yeah, that'd be pretty sweet. I'm just gonna take some money.
Oh, so that's it for today's episode. Thank you so much for tuning in and supporting Horror Movie Talk. If you want to support it more monetarily, check out horrormovietalk.com. We got a couple ways you can help us. Our shop, the link to our Patreon, check that out. The link to Amazon if you're going to buy anything for your quarantine. Also, if you want to support some great supporters of the show, use code HMT at checkout for Shudder.com to get a 30-day free trial. And please send some love to Dustin Goebel at dgoebel00 on Instagram, at dgoebel00 on Instagram. Follow him and check out his art. And, you know, throw him some ducats to do a custom job. Like, you'd be surprised at how affordable it would be.
Yeah, Dustin, he really fucks.
Yeah. So that's it for today. Thanks, bye.
Yeah, we love you. Bye. Bye.